You know, I met Randy, and I know he's not here tonight, and it was wonderful to meet someone that was so enthusiastic about Alcoholics Anonymous. He was excited about the meeting and what goes on here, and we don't have enough of that today. I want to welcome the newcomers and anyone from out of town, and I want to, where's the gentleman that was a 10-minute speaker? I so enjoyed your talk. Thank you so much. It was just great. I want to know when you want me to wrap it up. No. The reason I want to know about is so that I don't spend too much time on what it was like. 9 o'clock? Okay. I always try to do not more than a third of my talk on what it was like, because we all know what it was like. Next Saturday is my 20-year sobriety date. And so I am... I'm so honored to be here tonight, because I feel that always this time of year is kind of emotional for me, and this time is especially, being that it's 20 years, and I want to just talk a few minutes about how I got here, you know, because I've been thinking a lot about the man that 12-stepped me, you know. I'm from L.A., and I designed clothes for 18 years, and I lived with an undercover narcotics guy for 11 years, and ended up behind my alcoholism doing prostitution and living in motels. And there was this guy that was working for one of my Johns, and he would hear about me and my addiction, and he told this guy that this guy that was my John did not drink or did not have a problem, and he would tell this guy that he wanted to talk to me. Now, this guy that wanted to talk to me was 3 years sober at this time. He'd been in and out of the program for 10 years, but he was 3 years sober, and he went to his sponsor. Can you imagine the talk? Listen, I want to go 12-step this crack addict, alcoholic, prostitute that's living in a motel and doesn't want to see me. Right? 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 So, years later, I thought he was my sponsor for 8 years in this program. But years later, I thought back on that incident and saw that there was something working in this man's soul that 12-stepped me, greater than logic, greater than theories, because there was no one that supported him talking to me, and he told me years later that he knew that he was supposed to talk to me, and he followed intuition, sixth sense, God consciousness. He was operating from something I had never seen or knew before, and that day that he came to 12-step me, I was sitting at a little table at a Howard Johnson's on Indian Hill Boulevard in Pomona off the 10 freeway, and I was really ripped. He was coming at 2 o'clock. I had a bottle of vodka, and I was smoking crack. And I was getting prepared for this 12-step talk. Now, this guy was an alcohol and drug counselor, and that's what I knew. I'd never heard of AA in my life. I knew he was an alcohol and drug counselor, so I was sure I was going to get a lecture. So I was going to be real, real prepared. When he walked in, I remember looking out the window, because they had these sliding glass doors, and I was looking out the window at 2 o'clock. I was looking for him, you know, because I was going to size him up. So I'm looking for him. I see this guy walking towards my room, and he's really, really skinny, emaciated looking, and kind of yellow and stooped over, and he looks so unhealthy. And I didn't know this. He was a kidney transplant patient. See, and he was very sick. He'd been on dialysis. But he wasn't too sick to come and 12-step me. And he came in that day, and he walked into that room where I was sitting at that little table, and he said, "Hi, my name's John, and I'm an addict and alcoholic, a drug and alcohol counselor, and I'd like to talk to you." I said, "You can talk to me, but I'm drinking it and I'm smoking it." And he said, "It's okay. Drink it up and smoke it up, but let me talk to you." And that guy shared with me his story, And he gave me a 12-step call exactly out of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. He told me he had 12 tools, and he'd give me a tool a month, and I'd never have to go back to alcohol again. And he talked to me for 2 hours, and I drank and I smoked the whole time he was there. And at the end of that 2 hours, he walked over and he wrote his phone number down on a piece of paper. And he said, if you ever get sick of dying, give me a call. I thought, this guy is serious. So every time after that that I would drink or use, I would hear his voice in my head. You know, they say what one alcoholic plants in the heart of another will always forever change you. And I would hear this. I got 12 tools. You never have to do that again. Different way of life. I couldn't believe this guy was in my head. So I'd call him. I'd go pick up the phone and I'd call him. And I'd say, hi, John, this is Tyler. He'd go, yeah, what do you want? I'd say, well, I want to talk. He'd say, don't call me till you're done. Boom. That hurt my feelings. Brother. I'm a sensitive alcoholic. So, you see, God had a plan for me. I'm doing prostitution in a hotel. I got a John that sends me a John, who they knew I'd never turn down a John. So God sent me a John, because his name was John. My John sent me a John. I think that's hilarious. God knew how to reach me. And my life was forever changed. I attempted suicide 3 months after that 12-step call. Couldn't do it. Had a spiritual experience that night. I didn't know it. Went to bed, woke up the next day, and I was completely changed. Would that have been enough to keep me sober? No way. But I walked outside of that motel room, and that was December 26, 1989, and I could not believe how I felt. I felt different. I didn't have one idea to use or drink, but inside, I felt the presence of a consciousness, of love. I remember walking outside and thinking, what has happened to me? So bizarre to me. I wasn't a religious person, and I went back in and I called John, and he became my sponsor. I told him what happened. It wasn't surprising to him. And when I read Bill's story, I knew that other people had had these experiences. So that was a long time ago, and I just wanted to share how I got here. And especially wanted to honor, John is dead now. He had another kidney transplant after that. And that man changed my life. He took me through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the 12 steps, and he taught me how to live. And, you know, I'm a product of great sponsorship, a loving God, this beautiful program, and great sponsorship. People that have cared about me, that have held me up, and friends that are here that have loved me. And, you know, if you don't have a fellowship that's growing up around you, create one. So I look at my drinking, and I ask myself, this 10-minute speaker shared so eloquently, I look at my drinking and ask myself, you know, I never knew I had the allergy of the body. I could see the obsession of the mind. I could see I couldn't stay stopped whenever I stopped, and I wanted to stay stopped, and I had great plans to stay stopped. But I never saw, I always thought that I could really go and drink a little. But as I looked through that first step and laid my experience next to it in the big book, I saw that every time I wanted to go drink a little, I drank a little, and I couldn't drink a little. I couldn't. And I had lost control over how much I drank. And I was powerless over staying stopped. I had lost power, I had lost choice, and I had lost control. If you lose one, you lose all three. And I don't believe that I could ever wake up and choose not to drink. That is beyond my power. Every time I chose not to drink, I drank. And I drink no matter what, I drank no matter what. But as I've gone through this program, I've gotten a deeper experience with the steps, and that's what I'm excited to share with you tonight, is about my experience. I almost feel like I have two sobriety dates. Now, for 13 years in this program, I did Vista Jail for 10 years, and I did County Detox every Sunday for 10 years, because I'm very sick. I mean, really, I came here and I've sponsored tons of people through the years, and I am one of the sickest. When they said grave mental and emotional disorders, I was like, thank you. Because I felt that, you know, I wasn't right. I mean, I had a long career of designing clothes in a career that allowed me to party the way I wanted to. No one cared. You know what I mean? They didn't care what you did. Had I been a bank manager, I would have probably hit bottom sooner because I would have lost a lot of jobs. You know? But is this second part of the first step, is it internal or is it external? I began to look at that with a guy that came into my life at 13 years sober. When I was staying sober, and you can, on great meetings, great fellowship, lots of gratitude, and the pain of working at doing meetings at Vista Jail and County Detox. And I today don't have to do that. Nothing's wrong with it. It saved my life. But there was something missing. There was something deep inside of me missing at 13 years sober, and there were times that I wanted to blow my brains out. I wouldn't have done it, and I don't want to sound like a drama queen, although probably I am sometimes, but I don't want to sound like one, but that's the way I felt. And you know, when you're doing all this and you got an image, your image will kill you in Alcoholics Anonymous. Perfect sponsor, guru, step giver, blah, blah, blah. That stuff will kill me here. And you see, I didn't hear a solution anywhere in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in San Diego that answered the question that was going on inside of me. Did all 12 steps, Tyler. Just live in 10, 11, and 12. What's your problem? In enough pain, just do a little 4-step. See, I experienced something I never had before, and that's that I can't live. Now, I'm saying this for me and a lot of my friends in the program, the way we live. You can do it any way you want. But for me, I can't live on a first step experience I had 13 years ago. And I started to work with a guy out of Texas that took me through the work in a way that I'd never been taken through before, and with a group of people that do all 12 steps every year. And that's what I've done for the past 7 years, and my life has been so infinitely changed. And you see, I still thought my unmanageable part of the first step was external. I missed a piece that I never even knew what 44, 45, and 52 meant. I knew that lack of power was a problem for me, but I was going to get a relationship with God that took away my dope and my alcohol, and God was going to help me run my life. Now, I didn't see this. I didn't see it because I hadn't been awakened to it, because I hadn't gone through the big book in a way that awakened me to this. But when I look at that unmanageable part of my life, it's only unmanageable externally if I'm still drinking. That I have to experience an insanity, a deep spiritual malady, unmanageability that manifests in my life as the bedevilments. I have to experience this to the depth of my being, to see to the depth of my being my need for a relationship with God. I never had that. I had moral and philosophical convictions galore, didn't we all? I didn't want to have affairs with my best friend's husband. More than one. I didn't want to steal from the guy that I worked for in Long Beach, but he didn't pay me enough. I just supplemented it. I don't see a problem. Right? I mean, I knew honesty. I came from a very good family. I was the only problem. But I came from a good family. The book tells me, lack of power is my dilemma. I can't live a moral life without... See, to me, I knew right from wrong. But what would happen is I always did what was right for me. See, that was what was right. And moral and philosophical convictions galore. What are yours today? A philosophical conviction is an idea of what I need in life to make me okay. Could I create a life out there before I got sober that would keep me sober? Could you? I couldn't. So I start to see that lack of power is my dilemma. Once I put alcohol in my system, I can't control the amount. I have a phenomenon of craving, allergy to the body, and when I'm stopped, I can't control the stop. Mental obsession. But wouldn't it be interesting to find out what sets up this condition? What happens to these people we see in the program that are 10 years and 15 years and they go back out? What happens? Now, we hear they don't go to meetings, but you think there's something deeper. I think there's something deeper. And if I can experience this, I may not have to do it. See, I can go through the big book, and I can lay my experience next to the guy in More About Alcoholism that had 25 years sobriety and thought he could drink normal. And I say to myself, and every time through the work, 15 years sober. Do you feel like you might be able now at 15 years, Tyler, to go back out and drink? And I'll tell you, I do. That does pass my mind. But the thing is this, is that if I get to smash that idea through the book rather than be in danger about going back out there. So I begin to see that there's a condition inside of me, an insanity, that comes about, just comes on me, no matter what I can bring, to a situation of not wanting to drink, I can't stop the drink. I can't stop picking up a drink. There's this insanity. I wake up in the morning and I say, I'm not going to drink today. And then the second that's A, and the second thought B, you can do that. And by noon, something comes between A and B, and I'm drinking. The boss didn't treat me right. Friend called me, put me down. Any number of things. There's a party tonight. So I begin to see that there's something inside of me. Dr. Silkworth called it restless irritable discontent. There's an unmanageability of my spirit. It says that in resentment inventory, that when the spiritual malady is overcome, I straighten out mentally and physically. What are they talking about? That this peace inside of me that shows up as the bedevilments on page 52, having trouble in personal relationships. Now, when you write inventory, when I write inventory, and all the people I'm pissed at and everything in my sexual inventory, there's only one common thread, me. And I have trouble in personal relationships because they just don't do enough for me. This one doesn't love me enough, so I leave them. This one loves me too much, and they call and they complain, and they're smothering me. My mother doesn't appreciate me enough, and my dad's too hard on me. There's something inside of me that no matter what you do, I'm dissatisfied. You can't do it right. And any of you that are in relationships with alcoholics know what I'm talking about, sometimes even sober, right? So it says I'm having trouble in... This is two of my very closest friends right here. So they're in a relationship. They might not be after this meeting's over. She's the problem. So I look at, am I having trouble in personal relations? This is a great inventory. This is the most accurate inventory for my spiritual condition in the big book. In my experience, am I having trouble in personal relationships? Now we're talking family, we're talking job, we're talking intimate, we're talking brothers. Right now, today, how are you doing in personal relationships? Am I prey to misery and depression? It says in before the bedevilments that I should be as willing to change my point of view concerning these bedevilments as I have about the obsession and the allergy. And what it's saying is that, see, I want to say that all my problems in those seven areas of the bedevilments are a result of external circumstances. No, they're not. Just like my what happens when I drink is a result of my alcoholism. It's not why I'm an alcoholic. Because what am I going to say to the woman that I 12-step up in Rancho Santa Fe that's a doctor's wife that never leaves her house, that never has any drama? Nothing. What am I going to say? it's an internal condition. So I'm prey to misery and depression because how I feel in here is dependent on everything external. Boss is loving me. I'm on top of the world. Boss ain't loving me. I don't have anything solid on the inside. Am I full of fear? Can I make fear go away on my power today, sitting in a chair? Can I fix fear? No, I can't. Can I make a living? They're not talking about money. They're talking about a life. A life that has meaning, that's worthwhile. Can I create that on my own power? Sober. No God. Can I make fear go away? Like I said, no God on my power, sitting in that chair. Can I make it go away? I begin to see the depth of my powerlessness at a different level. In here, internal. I can't see the spiritual malady. It's like God. I can't see God, but I can see God manifest in my life. And I see the spiritual malady manifest through those things in my life when I'm untreated. And I don't want to live untreated. I did it a long time. And I will still be at times, but I have a way to live through these steps different than I ever had. I never did 10 and 11 every day. I did it when I felt like it. Did it when I thought I needed to. I read 84 through 88 every day, spend time at night doing it, quiet time in meditation. My life is so infinitely different as a result of doing the work in a deeper and effective, more effective way, turning statements into questions. And the statement I say to myself today, when I go through the work, I go through it with, you know, Tyler, you're 19 years sober. Maybe you're not an alcoholic. Let's go through the big book and lay our experience next to it and let's see if you are. I need a spiritual experience based on a question, not a statement. And this whole program is set for me to get a relationship with God that I can rely on. Not, I live with the 12 steps, but I rely on God. And so I'm going to share my most important, most meaningful spiritual changes through the steps. One was this piece, the unmanageable internal spiritual malady. It says in step 10, when the spiritual malady is in step 4, in the spiritual malady is overcome, I straighten out mentally and physically. It's only overcome contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Fit spiritual condition or not fit? The choice is yours. The choice is mine to how I work these steps, how I live this program. This is a program for living. It says it all over the book. And I thought in the beginning it was just a program to get drugs and alcohol off my back. I never saw the depth of what this program offered me. So I go through step 2, and I see today. Now, I have two friends in the back, you know, can I run my life successfully? And I have Pat and Karen back. I call them today and said, don't come. You've heard me speak too many times, blah, blah, blah. They're here. See, I still can't run my life on my will successfully. Am I convinced that my life run on my will never be a success? See, what I was talking about, when we see these people relapse, I always want to know. I always used to talk to them before I did the work the way I do it now through the big book. What was going on? It's always like, I quit going to meetings, pretty much is what I would hear. I quit going to meetings, quit calling my sponsor, that type of thing. But underneath that is something deeper. And what's deeper is that the delusion, the idea that I can run my life on my will, and my power has snuck back in, and I'm doing it. And that's why I go through all 12 steps every year, because I don't want to risk that. I know the ego rebuilds. I know that I start running the show. And every time I go through the work, my ego will say, you're fine. You don't need to do the work. Just do it every 5 years. You're just great. And you know what? I can't see it until I get into that fourth step and start in prayer making a list of people, principles, and institutions that I'm resentful at. And through step 1, 2, and 3, there appears an inventory that I don't think I have because I'm still spiritually fit. And I write inventory on a regular basis, and I'd like to share how the program that I work right now, today. I go to 4 to 5 meetings a week. I'm committed to 3. I have 2 home groups. I have 2 literature commitments at 2 different meetings. I do prayer and meditation every day. I told you 84 through 88. I work with a lot of people who are not dependent on me. They're dependent on the guidance of God through prayer and meditation. And that's the key. I don't think the book meant for us to say, take 10 people through the work and let them be reliant on you and just sponsor them the rest of your life. They're not dependent on me. They're dependent on God and prayer and meditation. And they work great programs because they work the kind of program through the big book. I want to go back to resentment inventory. I want to share with you a resentment that I had. I lived with an undercover narcotics guy for 11 years. He tried to kill me 4 times. And I have lots of drama. I have so much drama, but it's boring to me. The important thing of this is, I'm sick of my own drama. I hated this guy. When I got sober, I said I would never write inventory on him, ever. I hate what he did to me. And I wouldn't forgive him. I wouldn't put his name on a piece of paper for what I did bad things to him too, but he was way worse. Right? And I wasn't going to put his name on a piece of paper. And for 20 years, I got out of that relation at 31. And 20 years from 31 until 52, I wouldn't do it. I didn't write inventory on him until I was 14 years sober. And I was working with someone. I went through the work. I was working with another guy in Texas, and I was going through the work with no God. God's everything or God's nothing. You want a trip? Go through the work with God's nothing. You want to get closer to God? Say God's nothing. How's your future look then? Well, I went through the work with a guy that was a Christian minister and became an Eastern religion that doesn't believe in God. And he challenged me to go through the work with him like that. And I couldn't do it. When I got up to the 4th step, it got me closer to God. But he helped me in a lot of different ways. And one of the things he said to me was, because I wouldn't write inventory on this guy, he said, take to meditation for a week. What's the value of hanging on to this resentment? Right. The big book tells us that a business that doesn't take inventory will be broke, go broke. Annual regular inventory will go broke. And I'm in the spiritual business, and I don't want to go broke spiritually. That's a risky place for me. And no one had ever told me to look at the value. And this was the value after a couple weeks of meditation, I told them. This is delusional, but I'm driven by 100 forms of fear and delusion. Today, not to the degree, but they're there. And what I saw was that if I forgave him, I wrote inventory and had an opportunity to forgive him, that he'd come back in my life. He'd find me. The other thing I saw is that if I ever wrote, I could write column 1, 2, and 3 on him, but not my part. No. Because you see, if I saw that I was wrong, then he'd be right. And he was never going to be right. And the big book says, we were both wrong. We were both wrong. Sick like me. As in war, the victor only seems to win. You see, he was eating, sleeping, and showering with me for 20 years, and I hated him, and he owned my soul. And I got free through this beautiful inventory process. And I forgive him. And I am free of that resentment. And it was such a turning point in my life. I said, okay, I'll write inventory. But I'm never going to get free of this. And it just wasn't up to me to get free. In step 7, in 6, what did I find objectionable? The hate in my heart. what I did to him, how he owned my soul. Because I do 6 and 7 as an experience looking at inventory. What do I find in this interaction between this guy and myself? What do I find objectionable that I need an act of God for? Am I willing to turn to God with everything I find objectionable between me and him? All the lies, all the cheating, all of it. I don't do a character defect list. It doesn't say that in the big book anywhere. And if I do a character defect list, isn't that a manifestation of the deeper condition? That paragraph on 62 has to get proven. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-seeking, selfishness, self-delusion. I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate, seemingly without provocation. I did nothing. But I find at times I made decisions based on self, which put me in a position to be hurt. That has to get proven through inventory. And I had to see in 6 and 7 that every defect of character that I could write down, jealousy, anger, judgment, don't they all come from fear? So wouldn't it be helpful to me to look at what are they talking about on page 72 when they say the nature of my defects and my defects of character. The nature of my defects are the fear that drives the delusion, that results in the selfish thinking, that results in the self-seeking behavior, and there's nothing that I can do about the fear that drives the delusion without an act of God. And if I'm focusing on these little defects all out here, I used to, God help me be nice to this one, and then I come home and I'm mean to the next one. And it's like the mole game, right? Boop, boop, right? And I began to have an experience with 6 and 7 that blew me out of the water with these guys that brought me a deeper way to go through the book through questions and considerations. And I never saw the depth of what 6 and 7 meant until then. Cast out. The terms used in the big book are not self-help terms. And I go to a lot of meetings today that seem like self-help. And this is God help. Cast out, removed, rid of. I never went to therapy and my therapist said, we're going to cast this out, Tyler. He's a cool therapist. I love therapy. Helped me a lot. But I'm different. The delusion that I'm like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. Why did they say presently? Because they're talking to me at 15 years, at 7 years. Because this idea that this book doesn't talk to me, I write in this book sober. I write in it. This is a textbook to be studied and written in. The delusion that I'm like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. Today. Let me read you something like I just want to read. On the bottom. If you are as seriously alcoholic as I am, do I believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution today? Do I believe that? Am I in a position where life's becoming impossible? Sober. I've been there. And if I had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, I'm in trouble, I'm miserable, I'm 10 years sober, and is there anything human that's going to save me? I had but 2 alternatives, sober. One was to go on to the bitter end, untreated, blotting out the consciousness of my intolerable situation as best I could. We know how to blot them out. Internet porn, gambling, affairs, overshopping, overeating. And the other was to accept spiritual help. And I did this because I honestly wanted to, sober. So I try to write in my book a way that it speaks to me today so I can't say to myself, because this was the way it was when I was a year sober. This book talks to me today, presently, that I'm not like other people. And I want to live today in 10 and 11. And like I said, I work with a lot of people, but I want to live today. It says in 10 that we have entered the world of the Spirit. What does that mean to us? What living in the world of the Spirit means to me today is that I have reached a place through the 12 steps that I can tap into this infinite source of love and power. I can access God. I'm not like other people. You know, other people talks a lot about going to church, which see where religious people are right, and I hope you do. But having belief and faith is not enough. I must get access. And if being an alcoholic, the only way I've ever been able to get access to this power is through the 12 steps. So I've entered the world of the Spirit halfway through my ninth step. It says these promises, the ninth step promises, will always materialize if I work for them. What does that mean? Work for them. Well, I think it means doing 10 and 11, staying spiritually fit, working for others, trusting God, doing all the things that this beautiful program offers. Do you think that it means that I could exit the world of the Spirit and they won't materialize if I don't work for them? I think so. If it says it one way, it has to mean it the other way. It says that I'm to continue to take personal inventory. And when resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid, I'm to make amends. It says I should talk to someone. I think the person I harmed is the person I need to talk to right in front of me, if I can. And if I can, I'll talk to someone else. And it says that my job now is to grow in understanding and effectiveness, understanding of God's will for me, and the effectiveness of carrying his message out there into the world. Love and tolerance of others is my code. And I think there's no greater idea of God than God is love. And when I do that nightly review and I ask myself, was I loving and kind to all? Usually not. I'd like it to be. I'd like to have days, and I have had days like that. But most of the time, I can see what I could have done better. And it says, I have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. And that takes me into the greatest promises in this book. The greatest one. By this time, sanity will have returned. The big bet, step two, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. It's fulfilled if I've done what the book said. And it says that I'm put in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. And I believe that this book has offered me to be neutral in many areas of my life greater than my alcoholism. And that's why this program works for all the other addictions and obsessions that are out there. I have a chance to be neutral. And how many times have I don't want spiritual la-la land. I love everybody, and, you know, everything's wonderful. And well, I don't want that. I want to be real, present, and in truth. You know, and God is truth. I want that in my life. And it says if I'm spiritually fit, I just want to look at that. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. Greatest promise in the book. It does not exist for us. I'm either cocking or I'm afraid. That is my experience. That is how I react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. And I think it's a really good question this time of year to ask yourself and for me to ask myself, what is fit spiritual condition? What does it take for me in my program to be in fit spiritual condition? And that's to be active in all three parts of the circle and triangle. Recovery. Unity, the fellowship, do I have commitments at meeting, and the spiritual, helping others. And it says, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve. It says it's easy to let up on the spiritual program and rest on our laurels. Ooh, sorry. You know, there's a lot of statements in this book that really let me know that the book understands me, and that's one of them. They know it's easy to rest on the awards I've gotten so far, the relief. But I want recovery. I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. But spiritually, it's only overcome. And it says alcohol is a subtle foe. Why is alcohol for me a subtle foe? To me, it doesn't show up as alcohol. See, I'm not like other people. What I'm feeling, I'm so angry, I'm so sad. What I'm feeling is not the bottom line. The bottom line is I could drink. And alcohol's so subtle because it won't show up in my life as drinking. It'll show up at this resentment, this tire that popped, this that went wrong in my life when I'm not doing the things that I need to do to take care of my spiritual condition. Prayer and meditation, making amends. When I make a lot of amends, and I'm on the phone making them because I do things, I step on people's toes and I hurt people, and even though I don't want to. But if I have an opportunity with this program to wake up each day and be free, this is about freedom. How much freedom do you want? Every day is a day when I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. And that's a great question for me as I'm going through the day when something's going to be difficult, any to pause. That habit of pausing that step 11 offers me, to pause and turn to God, relax and take it easy. I don't struggle. This vision of God's will, I've acquired the sixth sense, God consciousness. What is the vision of God's will in all the areas of my life? I'm reading a book right now called Me and My Big Mouth. It is. I was really noticing in my nightly review and in my step 11, did I really turn my mouth over to the care of God? I know it sounds funny, but it's really true. I saw that my words were, I didn't like some of the stuff and the way I was talking to people, and I thought, well, God is sixth sense. Well, who's running the other five senses, Tyla? Sounds like you are, right? What would the vision of God's will for me be in these other five senses? What could my words be more godly? I think they could, and I had bought that book before the awareness came, but I stuck it on a shelf. And then I thought, I bought that, Me and My Big Mouth. It's a great book. What would the vision of God's will in my hearing? Do I have a finely tuned ear within? You know, where, Cece's here. You know, she's a horse lady. Horses develop a reining ear to listen. Have I developed a listening ear for God? How do I listen to you, God's kids? Do I hear you? Do I see you? How's my vision, the other sense? Am I seeing the world through what God would want me to see, or I'm seeing it in limited vision of myself? Am I seeing you beyond the persona that you're wearing? Am I seeing you as my spiritual brother and sister? Am I smelling the goodness of life? Am I smelling the roses? Am I looking at the good side of life? And am I physically touching you in a way that brings us closer and in oneness? I'm going to wrap it up with, it's hard to put in words as I look back from where I've come from, that the grace of God, this isn't a program about justice, it's about mercy. No one deserved a life like I've been given less than I did. I did horrible things out there, violent things. And I've been able, with the power of God and this beautiful program, to finish every conscious amends I'm aware of. And you can too. And I've been given a life, not out here, not the stuff. I lived on the streets. I know. I drove Ferraris and lived on top of the world, dating movie people and doing all kinds of wild stuff. I've had it both ways. I know what having a good life is, and it's what's in here, that I have peace most of the time. I have a beautiful relationship with God. I have wonderful family and friends that love me dearly. And I know there's some new people here. And if you're new or you have time in this program and you're suffering or you're hurting from untreated alcoholism, go back through these beautiful steps and have a new experience with a loving God. And I'm so, so grateful for the life I've been so freely given. Thank you.